The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we are tackling glaucoma, the silent thief of sight, with guest expert Dr. Lisa Gamel of the USF Ophthalmology Department. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through health education. And as mentioned, today's show is on glaucoma, and I want to thank my special guest expert, Dr. Lisa Gamel, who, despite having a little cold and feeling a little under the weather, as the weather has changed here in Tampa, has nevertheless made it her way here to the studio. Thanks, Lisa, for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me here, Dr. Maskin.
Dr. Gamel received her undergraduate degree from Dartmouth College and her medical degree from Cornell University Medical College in New York. She did a residency at NYU Medical Center and her fellowship in glaucoma at the Tufts New England Eye Center, specializing in the medical and surgical treatment of glaucoma. She practiced and taught at the Beth Israel Medical Center and the New York Eye and Ear Infirmary in New York City for approximately 8 years before moving to Tampa. Dr. Lisa Gamel is now an associate professor of ophthalmology and full-time faculty member at the USF Eye Institute in North Tampa. She specializes in the treatment of glaucoma and cataracts. She has lectured nationally and internationally, instructing patients and other ophthalmologists on these subjects. And so, as I always like to do for our listeners, we don't assume anyone has any level of expertise in this area. We start at the beginning. What is glaucoma?
Okay. Glaucoma is a disease that causes damage to the optic nerve. The optic nerve is the nerve that connects the eye to the brain and is responsible for making us all see. Glaucoma is usually associated with an increase in the eye pressure, and this increased eye pressure can cause damage to the nerve, much in the same way that high blood pressure can cause damage to the heart and other organs of the body.
I'm going to be injecting a question here.
Okay.
So here's my question now. So the optic nerve connects the eyeball to the brain. Is the optic nerve considered part of the brain?
Yes, the optic nerve is considered neural tissue, which is the same as brain tissue.
So when you examine a patient, for example, and you actually can see the optic nerve when you examine the patient, you can actually see, is it true that it's the only part of the body or the only place in the body where you can actually directly see brain tissue?
Pretty much. That's what makes it so fascinating for us.
All right. And so, going back to how you were describing, in glaucoma, the majority of glaucoma is identifying elevated pressure inside the eye and the impact on that optic nerve?
Yes. In the majority of cases, the eye pressure will be elevated. In some cases, it might not. But when we evaluate a patient for glaucoma, we don't only take into consideration the eye pressure. We look at the optic nerve, we examine the front of the eye, and in addition, we also use a special lens called a gonio lens to look at the angle of the eye to differentiate between different types of glaucoma.
So, all right, even though the action or the final pathway of potential blindness, and again, maybe we should back up and ask, what's so important about knowing if one has glaucoma?
Well, glaucoma usually causes loss of vision in a very insidious way. Usually it affects the vision in the side, which is called our peripheral vision, first. And the problem with that is that most patients aren't aware they're losing this vision as it's happening. As a result, we call glaucoma the sneak thief of sight. For this reason, it's so important for patients to follow up regularly with their doctor to try to detect this disease early.
So what we're saying there, therefore, is that you can develop glaucoma and not even be aware of it and steadily losing your vision.
Yes. The majority of patients who especially have open-angle glaucoma usually have no symptoms at all.
Okay. Now, so we understand now the imperative nature of knowing if you have glaucoma or not. As a further tangential question, at what point should patients be evaluated to see if they have the early signs of glaucoma?
That's a very good question. And that brings us to the various groups of people who are at the highest risk for glaucoma. And if we're talking about primary open-angle glaucoma, which is the most common type of glaucoma and accounts for about 60 to 70% of all cases, the populations most at risk are people, both men and women, over age 65, African Americans, who are 6 to 8 times more likely to be at high risk for this disease than other populations, people with diabetes or high blood pressure, people who have had a history of an eye injury, anyone that's ever taken steroid medications for another medical illness, such as prednisone or inhaled steroids that are very commonly used for asthma.
How about users of tobacco?
Tobacco has not been really very closely associated with glaucoma. Another group that's also at high risk are people who are nearsighted, mm-hmm, as well.
Okay, so with that regard, obviously the major cause of glaucoma, and we'll be discussing the different types of glaucoma, but this majority form of glaucoma, so-called open-angle glaucoma, strikes patients 65 and above, as well as diabetes and blood pressure. So in other words, if, for example, let's say you have a child with type 1 diabetes, should that child be checked for glaucoma?
Not necessarily. That child might be at a higher risk for glaucoma if someone in the family had glaucoma. But in addition, there are types of glaucoma that can be caused by diabetes itself. For example, if that child has very bad diabetic retinopathy, that could put them at risk for a type of glaucoma called neovascular glaucoma.
So that child with type 1 diabetes, as part of his medical care, will be seeing an ophthalmologist anyway.
Correct.
And as part of the routine examination, they'll be evaluated for glaucoma as well as other impacts of diabetes on the back of the eye. So for example, let's say we have a mom out there listening who has children maybe 8 years of age or maybe a teenager. Should she have her child seen by the ophthalmologist or to be evaluated for glaucoma? If, let's say, that there's no family history and everything seems to be okay, and is there any, or, and if, and further up, at what age we think that a baseline pressure should be taken of a patient?
That's a very good question. I'll start with the baseline pressure, and I think in a high-risk group, such as you're saying it's a child with diabetes or just a healthy child.
Let's say a healthy child who's not African-American at first and then going to the African-American population.
Okay. A healthy child with really no other risk factors, usually these children are going to have their vision screened in school. And if they fail a vision screening, they will often get sent to an optometrist or an ophthalmologist to have a thorough evaluation. So unless the child has other risk factors, such as they're extremely myopic or nearsighted, or there's someone in the family who had glaucoma at a very young age, I don't think there's a real need, especially in the early teens, to get them screened for glaucoma in particular.
So if they have a risk factor, family history, African-American perhaps, diabetes, that's different, or eye injury, as you mentioned earlier, then that's different. But in a healthy individual, therefore, what do you think? 20s then, 30s? At what point should they? Because, of course, well, at what point should they have a check for glaucoma with a baseline pressure?
Well, any people who fall into the risk categories I mentioned, but usually people will show up at an ophthalmologist's office because they have some other issue going on. They may be wearing glasses. They may be showing up because they're becoming presbyopic in their 40s or early 50s. And in general, if we're looking at the general population that's at greatest risk, I would say it's patients probably in their 60s that are going to be at the highest risk for developing glaucoma. And in fact, Medicare does pay for routine screenings for glaucoma in this age group.
All right, let's move on to different types of glaucoma, and you've used the term open-angle glaucoma. And earlier in this segment, we talked about, or you mentioned the use of a special lens to look in the angle of the eye, a gonial lens. Would you describe the difference between open-angle and closed-angle glaucoma?
Absolutely. In open-angle glaucoma, there's a part of the eye called the meshwork that rests between the cornea and the iris. And this meshwork acts as a natural drain in the eye. So when fluid is produced in the eye, it flows out through the meshwork, and this creates an equilibrium and maintains an eye pressure somewhere between 10 and 21. As people get older, the meshwork starts malfunctioning. It doesn't filter fluid out as well. So in the same way that a drain in a sink might get clogged up and the water might back up, the meshwork doesn't function as well, and the pressure will rise in the eye.
So for that reason, therefore, it's important. Let's say you're 65 years of age without a history of glaucoma and your baseline pressures thus far have been normal. It's important to continue to be evaluated ongoing because as you age, then the risk increases as you
yes.
get older. So you can't just say, okay, I don't have glaucoma at 65 or 70. I'm not going to get glaucoma the rest of my life. You cannot say that. Is that an accurate? Would you agree with that?
That is an accurate statement. The risk for developing glaucoma does go up the older that you get, unfortunately.
So if you have a normal exam and you're 65 or 70, you need to continue to see your ophthalmologist or optometrist every year or so.
Yes, the American Academy of Ophthalmology recommends screenings annually for people in that age group.
All right, and we'll be back with more. Call us at 289-1860. That's 289-1860. And outside of Hillsborough County is toll-free 877-969-8600. Call in with your questions about glaucoma. And we'll be right back with more.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. The November election results prove that America is ready to hear straight talk about the issues that matter. Glenn Beck's terrific new book, Arguing with Idiots, is just that. It debunks liberal myths about everything from illegal immigration to health care. And you can get Glenn Beck's book free with a subscription to Town Hall Magazine. So Town Hall Magazine is loaded with must-read stories about the conservative renaissance in America every single month. It makes a great gift. For Glenn Beck's book free with your subscription, log into townhallmagazine.com. That's townhallmagazine.com.
America's digital goddess, Kim Komando here. Cameras, camcorders, home electronics, HDTVs, computers, online security, privacy, Facebook, MySpace, Blu-ray, and MP3s. Phew, it's a good thing I'm so very gentle on your ears. If it's in your digital life, it's right here on your radio. After all, they don't call me America's digital goddess for nothing.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with a doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin, and we are tackling glaucoma today with my special guest expert, Dr. Lisa Gammell from the USF Eye Institute. And Lisa, we talked a little bit about what is glaucoma and certain risk factors for developing glaucoma, and we started getting into the different types of glaucoma. You talked about the angle, the angle being, I guess, the angle between the cornea and the iris, was the colored part of the eye where the meshwork sits in that angle. Open angle being, I guess, a clear shot to that meshwork, nothing blocking it. And we started going into discussion of, well, you mentioned how that angle, as we get older, gets clogged, and in doing so can elevate the pressure inside the eye, leading to increased risk of glaucoma. How about closed-angle glaucoma? Would you comment on the other major type of glaucoma, closed-angle glaucoma?
Sure. Narrow-angle glaucoma represents about...
Narrow-angle and closed-angle
are similar, yeah,
okay.
They're the same.
Okay.
Closed-angle or narrow-angle glaucoma represents about 10% of all cases of glaucoma out there. And in narrow-angle glaucoma, what happens is there is a block in the pathway of fluid outside of the eye, but this is an anatomical block. What happens is that fluid gets trapped behind the iris, and the iris itself actually pushes up against the meshwork and prevents fluid from flowing out of the eye. This can cause a very sudden and dramatic rise in pressure, and unlike open-angle glaucoma, can create very dramatic symptoms such as pain, blurred vision, headache, halos around lights, nausea, and vomiting.
Very important to make that point that when pressure gets significantly elevated, it can cause systemic symptoms, specifically, as you mentioned, nausea and vomiting.
That's correct.
And I've had the experience, and I know you've had the experience too, that patients went to a gastroenterologist or an internist complaining about nausea and vomiting, and unfortunately they had a full workup, not picking up the fact that they have had elevated pressure in the eye. And I know as a cornea specialist, if I've had that experience, I know you've had that experience too.
Yes, I have, many times. And often what will be missed is that the patient has a bright red, painful eye, and often a mid-dilated pupil, which is another very important sign that this event is happening to the patient.
Now, you mentioned that this can happen on an acute basis, but it can also happen on a chronic basis as well.
It can, and there are some very subtle signs and symptoms that you might be having intermittent angle closure if you're at risk for this disease. For example, if you have intermittent blurry vision, especially when you're in a dark room in a movie theater or you wake up in the middle of the night feeling that way, you can also have intermittent headaches when you're in a dark room as well. And that can be a very subtle sign that you're at risk for an angle closure attack.
Okay, on the line is Barbara. Barbara from St. Pete, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi, Dr. Maskin. I have a question. I have had a corneal transplant and using steroids, drops. Is this also, does it cause glaucoma, or in how long does it take, or
Good question.
Am I at risk?
Okay. Dr. Lisa, steroid-induced glaucoma or hypertension?
That is a very excellent question. Steroid eye drops can cause an increase in eye pressure. It doesn't happen in everyone. Usually, if steroids are going to increase your eye pressure, it will happen within 2 to 3 weeks of starting the steroid drops. The people that are at greatest risk for developing this type of glaucoma are ones who have a family history of glaucoma or have a family history of someone who is what we call a steroid responder. If you've had a corneal transplant, you're probably seeing your doctor fairly regularly, and you should in order to check the pressure and make sure that the pressure does not go up when you're on the steroid drops.
I am Dr. Maskin's patient, and wonderful. And I just happen to be listening to the radio. We're driving, and this is why I'm calling.
Good for you, Barbara. It's very important to be proactive, and I congratulate you for engaging yourself in gaining more knowledge about your eye conditions. You never have enough.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you,
Barbara.
Good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And on the line is Elaine. Elaine, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
Now, Elaine is a patient of Dr. Gamel's, and I understand that you're what we call a glaucoma suspect.
I guess that's what you call me.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your experience when it was first became apparent that you may have an issue with glaucoma or elevated pressure in the eye.
Well, it was probably detected about 4 years ago, and I was put on the use of eye drops to reduce the pressure, and over time that did not seem to be doing the job that it was expected to do, so I was put on a new eye drop that does seem to be working. Other than that, I have absolutely no awareness whatsoever that I have glaucoma in listening to the previous system description of symptoms.
Well, let me ask you, how high were the pressures at its peak?
They were, I believe, over about 21 at the peak.
All right, so they were in the low 20s.
Right.
All right, and your doctor obviously was concerned that you may have in the early stages of developing glaucoma, and put you on eye drops. Now, this is before you went to see Dr. Gamel?
Yes.
Okay. And all right, so they put you on drops. The first set of drops did not help you, but the second
set have been helping me. Yes, has reduced. I think my levels now are down around 14, 13.
All right. Now, Lisa, when Elaine first saw you, what were your thoughts, if you can recall, as far as Elaine and in the typical patient with so-called ocular hypertension? And I guess the question first is actually, when you evaluated Elaine, did she have signs of glaucoma? And then maybe you can address that briefly too, changes in the optic nerve head appearance and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Elaine, I want to thank you for calling in. The term glaucoma suspect is very vague, and patients can be called a glaucoma suspect for any number of reasons. They can have elevated eye pressure or what we call ocular hypertension with minimal optic nerve changes or signs of glaucoma and a normal visual field, or they can have fairly normal pressures or just mildly elevated pressures and a normal field and a normal-looking nerve, or they can have a very suspicious-looking optic nerve that looks like there should be signs of early damage and possibly field damage, but their field may be normal. And anyone that falls into these categories, depending upon the experience of the physician and how concerned the physician is, we might decide to treat the patient. With ocular hypertension in particular, it's been shown that over 10% of patients with elevated eye pressures, 22 to 25 or over, will go on to develop glaucoma, especially if they have other early risk factors for glaucoma, such as changes in the optic nerve, and in addition, a thin cornea when tested with an ultrasound pachymeter.
Well, that's very important. So the bottom line there is if you're, and this is not just for Elaine, but all listeners, if your pressure is between 20 and 25, even though there are no changes of the optic nerve head when the ophthalmologist or optometrist looks, and even though the test for peripheral field, the visual field test, is normal, there's still a risk that in time glaucoma will develop.
There could be. Like I said, 22 to 25 or higher, especially given the scenario of a thin cornea, because what a thin cornea means is that when we check the pressure in the office, we're actually underestimating the pressure. So it could be a number of points higher.
And that's due to our present limitations on checking the pressure or getting it accurate, the most accurate pressure.
Correct.
So, all right. So, So Elaine came to you because of this concern. Does she have visual field changes or an optic nerve that suggests glaucoma at this time?
Elaine has a visual field that's for the most part normal. Her optic nerve is mildly suspicious looking. She did have ocular hypertension with pressures in the mid-20s. And so the decision was made to get the pressure lower just to protect her eye and prevent any loss of vision down the road.
Okay, so when the decision is made to do that, obviously, and like for Elaine, here's a woman who, Elaine, you can correct me if I'm misstating here, you have had no symptoms. You didn't realize that your pressure was elevated, as Dr. Gamel mentioned, that often in these patients with open angle glaucoma, as she has, or open angles, she has no symptoms. So it's hard for the patient sometimes perhaps to say, why should I take this medicine when I feel fine? And they have to have that understanding that this disease can progress insidiously, to use your word earlier. So how do you, Dr. Gamel, decide what therapy to use when realizing that the patient herself may question the use of it, and compliance may be an issue when there's no symptoms? How do you make it as easy as possible to treat it?
Well, I always discuss all the risks and benefits of treatment with the patient. I discuss the risk of developing serious vision loss from the disease. We talk about the risks of any possible treatments we might start. And I always take into consideration the rest of the patient's health profile when trying to pick a medication. Usually, when I'm starting medical therapy, I will pick a drug that doesn't need to be taken more than once a day because that's the easiest for the patient. And I'll discuss any possible side effects that they might have with them and encourage them to take the medication and to come back for their follow-up visits.
So, and then if they do develop a side effect or they're concerned, then they should immediately talk to you and not just stop taking the drug.
Right. It's very important if you're ever having a symptom that you think might be a side effect of a medication to call your doctor and discuss it with them. They can bring you into the office, usually right away, and see if they agree that that's a side effect of the medication, discuss the options, and switch you to a different medication. But you don't want to risk stopping the medicine because your pressure might shoot up, and that could be damaging to your nerve.
What do you think, Elaine? Does that sound good?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And it makes, in my particular case, it makes a very, very strong case for people having regular, checkups with an ophthalmologist.
Mm-hmm. And if I may ask, how old are you, Elaine?
71.
Okay. All right. And so now, Lisa, relatively recently, we've had access to once-a-day therapy for glaucoma. When were the so-called prostaglandin medications introduced? A few years ago?
Probably. I'm trying to remember back. Probably about 8-9 years ago. And since that time, there are now 3 different prostaglandin analogs on the market, and they all work relatively well. Some patients are more tolerant of one type than the other, but the wonderful thing about them is they only need to be taken once at nighttime before the patient goes to bed, and they seem to be very well tolerated and have very few systemic side effects.
And that's huge because, and some patients actually may still be out there on pilocarpine. I'm sure it still has uses for certain patients, but the pilocarpine, which has been used for decades and decades, is a 4-times-a-day drop.
That's correct, it is. And sometimes we will still use it in a patient who is a poor surgical or laser candidate, where we just need to get the pressure as low as possible. But we have many other drugs available in our armamentarium nowadays.
Very good. So there is nice progress when discussing the medical therapy of elevated pressures and glaucoma. Elaine, I'm going to give you an opportunity to ask a question here before we go to another quick break.
Well, my primary question is, is the prediction in terms of maintaining my status quo if I remain on the current medication I'm on? Can I expect it to stay the same? Can I expect it to worsen over time?
Well, that's a very good question, and that brings me to some of the glaucoma literature. And there was a major study done many years ago called the Advanced Glaucoma Intervention Study, and that showed that even in patients with advanced glaucoma, if we keep the pressures in the low teens, that there is an extremely low risk of progression of disease. So for you, Elaine, unless something dramatic changes, since you don't have any visual field changes and your pressure is in the low teens, as long as you keep coming back to the office for regular visits, I think you're going to be okay.
That's good news.
That's excellent news. All right, Elaine, keep up the good work, and we want to thank you for sharing part of your Sunday today with us on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be right back with more on glaucoma.
The Focus on Females Healthcare Education programs are for you. Visit our free 5th annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27th, 2010, at the Tampa Convention Center. And every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
America's digital goddess, Kim Komando here. Cameras, camcorders, home electronics, HDTVs, computers, online security, privacy, Facebook, MySpace, Blu-ray, and MP3s. Phew, it's a good thing I'm so very gentle on your ears. If it's in your digital life, it's right here on your radio. After all, they don't call me America's digital goddess for nothing.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today's topic is glaucoma with guest expert Dr. Lisa Gamel from the USF Eye Institute. And for everyone out there with a question on glaucoma, we are at 289-1860. Call us in, call us a question, 289-1860, outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Okay, so Lisa, we've talked so far about elevated or glaucoma in the setting of elevated pressure, which is the usual setting. I just want to announce that we'll have a separate show to tackle what's called low-tension glaucoma, where the patient develops signs of glaucoma where the pressure is not elevated. So we're going to stick today, continuing on with elevated, the typical situation of glaucoma where the pressure is elevated. Now, there have been, over the last several years, the development of new technologies to identify the progress of glaucoma. And you mentioned already, Lisa, how the examination includes the entire eye, but really focuses in on the visual field evaluation and the optic nerve head evaluation, as well as the angle. Tell us about what you use, the new technologies that you use to monitor progression. In fact, in some cases, I guess, even when the optic nerve head looks normal, with these technologies can actually pick up so-called nerve fiber layer dropout.
That is very true. I just do want to mention that still to this day, the gold standard for diagnosing glaucoma and monitoring it over time is getting fundus photographs of the optic nerve and getting annual visual field evaluations. But other technologies that can help us maybe detect damage to the nerve a little earlier are so-called optic nerve head imaging technologies. There are a number of them. One is called the Heidelberg retinal tomograph, optical coherence tomography, and the GDX scanning laser. At USF, at the Eye Institute, we use optical coherence tomography. It provides a very good resolution of the optic nerve. And what it can actually do is pretty much count the number of fibers in the optic nerve and tell us if any of them have dropped out due to disease.
So this will enable, so in other words, this raises the sensitivity of picking up early disease beyond, say, what the visual eye can spot.
That is true.
Even with our direct ophthalmoscope.
That is true. That is true. It can diagnose what we call pre-parametric glaucoma, or glaucoma that doesn't necessarily show up on visual field testing. And you don't necessarily treat everyone that might have some changes on an OCT exam, but it certainly raises your index of suspicion, and you might want to follow that patient a little bit more closely. And if they do develop disease, it's something you can use as an adjunct along with field testing and fundus photography to more closely monitor the patient and pick up disease progression a lot earlier.
Right. And so doing, minimize damage and loss of sight. Excellent. Now, let me ask about the what if a patient wants to know, is it okay to miss an appointment? What's the impact of that?
I would have to definitively say no.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. If you have glaucoma, depending upon how bad your disease is, your doctor will try to schedule for regular office visits. If you have mild disease, you might need to be seen anywhere between every 4 to 6 months. If you have advanced disease, you might need to be seen anywhere from every 2 to 4 months. And you really have to trust that your physician is asking you to come back so they can monitor your disease closely, because they're trying to prevent vision loss. If you have to miss an appointment, you need to reschedule one within a very short time window so that they can make sure that your pressure remains within the expected range they want it to be, and that there's no change in your optic nerve head.
Mm. All right. So if a patient misses an appointment, they need to get back in there as soon as possible. Because again, if you miss a change, and if it's been, for example, in a mild case, they're being seen every 4 or 6 months. If they miss an examination, you know, and they wait another month or two, then something significant might occur.
Yeah, and I also want to stress again that, especially with open-angle glaucoma, there are usually no symptoms that go along with the visual loss. So the way to detect the visual loss is to be seen by your doctor and get visual field testing and have your optic nerve head evaluated on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us, is there any vitamins or lifestyle changes that can help reduce the risk of glaucoma or help you treat glaucoma?
That's an excellent question, and it's one that patients will often ask. There's been a lot of attention brought to the subject of vitamins for eye disease, especially since in the field of macular degeneration, antioxidant vitamins have been proven to be helpful in preventing progression of that disease. To date, however, there have really been no well-designed studies that show that vitamin therapy can help halt the progression of glaucoma or lower intraocular pressure, which is unfortunate. But what has been shown to help is regular exercise. There was a very well-designed study done many years ago that showed that aerobic activity for 30 to 40 minutes, 3 to 4 days a week, can lower the eye pressure by about 20 to 25%.
Wow.
Of course, if you want to engage in regular aerobic activity, you have to check with your internist and make sure you're healthy enough to do that.
20 to 25%. Did you say those were in eyes that had elevated pressure to begin with?
Or? Yes.
Okay. And do we have a possible mechanism of action been proposed for that, to explain that?
It might have something to do with what's called osmolality in the blood. The exercise might decrease the amount of fluid flowing around, and it might also just increase in general the health of the body and the eye as well.
Mm-hmm. That's tremendous. That's another reason to get up off the couch and get involved with various different activities. Whatever suits the individual. It could be, but it is aerobic, you mentioned.
Aerobic activity. That would be brisk walking, jogging, exercise, biking, okay. Anything along those lines. Swimming.
All right, good. Now, let's look at the patient, Lisa, who has good pressures. And I guess good pressures, let's stipulate pressures, say, of 15. Previously had pressures in the upper 20s with with loss of visual field and changes on the optic nerve, so-called cupping, increased cupping. So clearly glaucoma, pressures were brought down with medicine, drops, that is, to say 15 to 18. And yet on follow-up examinations, they show continued visual field loss, even with a good pressure. What is the approach at that point?
Well, there are a number of approaches you can take, depending upon the patient's desires and other risk factors the patient might have. You can consider adding another medication to help lower the pressure further.
So that's what I wanted to hone in on. The fact that just because your pressure is under 20, say 18 or 15, if further glaucoma damage is ensuing, then the conclusion is that the pressure must be brought lower.
Right. There is no magic number for any patient. If your pressure is at a certain level and you're having disease progression, we have to get the pressure even lower than that.
Perfect. Okay. And as you mentioned, one simple approach may be to add a second topical drop.
We can add a second and sometimes even a third topical medication if the patient can tolerate taking those medicines, has no medical risk factors that would contraindicate using additional medications, and as long as they have no allergies to the medications. If for some reason the medical therapy fails or the patient can't tolerate other medical therapies, we have laser procedures that we will often use as the next step in lowering the eye pressure.
And just to spend another moment on medications and the adverse effects and side effects, and I know you've had much, much more experience with this than I as a glaucoma physician. But some of these medications, like the so-called beta blockers, can cause a lot of systemic problems, such as depression, for example. In one particular case, a woman, unbeknownst to me, had gone to a psychiatrist because she was an ocular surface patient with dry eye and glaucoma as well, and was using a topical so-called beta blocker, timolol. And she evidently developed depression, serious psychiatric issues, had gone to a psychiatrist unbeknownst to me, finally came around coming back to me and had mentioned it. And at that point, we looked at the therapy she was on, and I noticed that she was on timolol, decided to to try to discontinue it to see the impact on her mental status. And indeed, within a week or two, she broke out of her funk. So it's really, I guess it's important for all glaucoma patients that are on topical medication to realize that, to share with their doctors, to share with their even their ophthalmologists is my point, share with their ophthalmologists that some of their changes in their body or mental status may reflect the topical drops that they're taking. And again, if you would speak as to the potential cardiopulmonary effects of topical beta blockers in the case of asthma patients, for example.
Absolutely. It's really amazing when you realize that one or two drops of an eye drop in your eye can cause such a significant effect on your body, such as depression. The beta blockers, in addition, can also lower the heart rate. They can lower your blood pressure. And as a result, they could cause you to feel faint or dizzy. They could actually cause you to pass out if you're susceptible to that. In addition, if you do have asthma, the beta blockers could worsen your breathing symptoms. So you have to make sure whenever you see an eye doctor that if they don't ask, you tell them what all of your other health issues are. And if you're on a particular medication, make sure that you share with your doctor any unusual symptoms you may be having at each visit when you go to the office.
That's so important. All right, we're going to take one more quick break and be right back with more. Last chance. Call in with your questions, 289-1860, outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
Are you underpaid or underappreciated in your current position? Spend too much time out of town or on the road? You love selling, but maybe you feel your career is in a rut. It could be what you're selling or who you work for. Now's the time to do something about it. Hi, I'm Barb Yoder, General Sales Manager at Salem Communications. Salem Tampa is looking for a confident, assertive person to join our marketing team and be an MVP to the business communities we serve. When you work with Salem Communications, you represent the top nationally syndicated talk show hosts on our four-station radio cluster. Salem is the top conservative values radio broadcaster, providing a financially rewarding, high-integrity work culture. Are you service-oriented? Do you enjoy making a difference for your customers? If you want the opportunity to work for a values-based company with serious income potential, send your resume to me at barb@salemtampa.com. That's barb@salemtampa.com. Salem Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back with on Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today is glaucoma, and I'm with Dr. Lisa Gamel, USF Eye Institute. And on break, we were talking about patients getting admitted to hospitals and for an internal medical problem, and that are and these patients are on eye drops prior to their admission, and all too often, these drops are forgotten about, and patients do not receive their drops during the hospital course or during their hospital stay. And Lisa, what do you think about that?
It can be a very big problem because especially if a patient is admitted for long-term care in the hospital, often their eye drops will be neglected. It's very important if you do have to go to the hospital, you might want to bring your eye drops with you in a little bag so that you can show them to the nurse or doctor when you get admitted to the hospital and so that your eye therapy can be continued. Because if you stop your eye medications, the pressure could shoot up to very high levels, which could unfortunately cause damage to the nerve that is not reversible.
Yeah, and whether it be glaucoma or if you're status post-corneal transplant, whatever the eye situation is, whatever the eye disease is that you have, that you're being treated with topical medication, you must either yourself or a family member, in case you're unable to express yourself for one reason or another, say, you know, status post stroke, but you need to have those medications continued. I've had patients reject a cornea transplant during a lengthy hospital.